Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
On Tuesday's show, we heard how grocery inflation could mean that your Christmas shopping might rise in price by a fifth compared to last year. So how do you manage the upcoming period without it becoming a massive financial burden? Well, joining me now to share some helpful advice, we hope, is personal finance expert Eoin McGee. And if you have any finance, money-based questions, keep them coming in. The WhatsApp number is 0870 32 32 32. Hello, Eoin.
Good morning, Claire.
Now is the time.
Yes, it is. It's funny enough because we haven't hit Halloween yet, but from a financial perspective, Christmas has started, and we need to be conscious of that and aware of that, because the money just starts to leak out of our wallet from here on in, and if we're not aware of it, it can just cause us problems. We'll end up with a financial hangover in January. Mm-hmm. So it's about being conscious and being aware of it. And one of the key things that I would suggest to people is, as Christmas starts to ratchet up and as you start to spend money on Christmas, take a note of it, whether it's on your phone or that evening on a pen and piece of paper, whatever way suits you. Take out your phone, write down, I bought a gift for such and such, or I spent a little bit extra in the groceries, or try and get a handle so that what you have for yourself then in January is you've an good idea, a very strong idea of how much Christmas actually costs you, because most people are guessing about it. And unfortunately, because we do the guessing and we guess all year, what does happen is a lot of people end up borrowing for Christmas. And there's different figures out there, Claire. So there's one piece of research that says 1 in 3 people will borrow for Christmas, another one, 1 in 5. I put up a post on Instagram last night and or yesterday afternoon and asked people how many people plan to borrow for Christmas. And yeah, already 1 in 10 people are planning to borrow.
Now, and as you get close, that's just miserable now, because if you're in March and you're short of cash, and one of the reasons you're short of cash is because you're paying back for Christmas that's gone three months ago, that's not a nice place to be, is it?
It's not. And you're like, that's what every loan is. Every loan is borrowing from the future to pay for today. And we need to think about loans, whether it's buy now, pay later, which people don't even recognise as loans, but buy now, pay later, the credit card, borrowing money from the credit union or the bank or wherever else to try and pay for something like Christmas. We do often wake up in January and say, oh, I'm so surprised with how much Christmas cost me. And I'm going to be hard here. I'm sorry, but I'm going to be hard. But the reality is Christmas is not a surprise. It happens every year. And if you're not prepared for it financially this year, do yourself a favour. Make sure you're in a better position this time next year than you are this year. I'm not going to go all bah humbug on it. You do need to enjoy Christmas. But just we need to remind ourselves what Christmas is all about, right? And I'm a financial planner and I'm all about money. But Claire, let me challenge you for a second. Can you, and you don't have to tell us, but can you remember 3 presents you got for Christmas last year?
I'd have to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I bet long you, and hard.
Yeah, and I bet you if I pushed you for 10 or 15 seconds, again, you don't need to tell us, but I bet you if I asked you, how did you feel last Christmas Day? Now, you might have been happy or sad or tired or whatever else it was, but fairly quickly you can remember how you felt last Christmas. And I think that's something we need to remind ourselves. Most people are going to forget by March what you bought them for Christmas. So why are you creating a financial hangover for yourself in January because you wanted to get them the right thing? They know what you think of them, whether that's good or bad. And no present is going to change that opinion. Oh, they must love me more than I thought they loved me because they got me this amazing thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the tools we have for this, Claire, is get a pen and paper and write down everyone you're going to buy for. Write down ideally everything you're going to buy for them and then put a price next to it. Because if you can do that, it makes it much more, again, I don't want to be bad humbug, but it takes some of the emotion out of the spending side of Christmas. And let's say I have a list and I have Claire, €50, Ronan, €40, right? And I go along and I find something, I say, that Claire would really like that. And I spend €60 on it because I think you'd really like it. I now have to go back to my list and find someone else to take a tenner off.
Oh, Ronan only gets a present that's worth 30.
30,
then.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're only 2 people on my list. There's nobody else on my list because I'm a financial planner. Right? So Ronan gets something for 30. Now, you never show anyone your list, and particularly as you adjust it. But the other important thing to do here when you're preparing yourself for Christmas, when I've bought your present, Claire, I need to cross it off the list. I need to not go back to that, because people say, when's the best time to shop? You can shop too early, but you can also shop too late, we'll go back to it in a minute. But one of the problems we create for ourselves if we shop too early, say I buy something today for you, let's stick with you, I buy something today for you. And in 6 weeks or 8 weeks' time, I'm walking through the shops and I see something else, oh, Claire would like that, right? And I buy again because it's so long ago since I bought the first one. The financial hit is probably gone because I haven't connected the two things together. And I kind of, ah, sure, I'll just top it up. So you have to be really careful about creating your list, buying for one person, crossing them off the list. And if you want to buy a second thing for that person, you have to have the rest of the list finished first.
Mm. So the reason for the list is twofold. You want to see in January how much Christmas cost you, but you also want to keep control over what you're doing this Christmas.
You're trying to, at the time that's full of emotion, you're trying to strip the emotion out of the spend. So particularly with the gift list, which is separate from your how much did Christmas cost me list. It's included in it, but it's a separate list, how much did Christmas cost me list. But the gift list needs to be really carefully managed is the word I'd use, because you'll be surprised, Claire, if you sat down this evening and you wrote down everybody you're going to buy for and how much your kind of budget is for each person. When you look at the bottom right hand corner of that piece of paper, you're going to be surprised with how much you're going to spend on gifts. The average family will spend €1,400 this year on Christmas. Well, sorry, we're so ahead of the game, Claire. That's actually last year's stats. We don't have this year's stats up to date yet.
Well, it's going to be more given what we're hearing about the turkey and the butter and everything
absolutely,
else.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's about €1,400. If you've no kids, it's about €800 as the total average cost of Christmas. Average means there's some people are going to well exceed that and other people will be won't be able to and will have to strip it back a bit and they'll be below that average. Mm-hmm. But just somewhere between €800 and €1,400 is what Christmas is going to cost.
I bought a Christmas decoration last weekend and all of my children laughed at me, but I need to put that on my list now as part of my Christmas
spend,
even
out though
your
it phone.
Happened in October.
Yes, you do. And that's the point. We've only got two pay packets left at Christmas. If you're paid by the month, you've got two pay packets left at Christmas. It's not that many. And if you're not ready for it, you need to start planning, because the 1 in 10 people on my Instagram last night who said, yeah, I'm going to borrow for Christmas. If I did that poll again, and I might do it again in a couple of weeks' time, I bet you that number
will
be gone.
Go up.
Yeah.
So then when we say we come to January now and we have our bottom line figure, this is what Christmas cost us. What you want us to do then is start putting away a 12th of that every month in 2025 so that, or in 2026, so that when we get to Christmas 26, we have the money in the bank.
Yeah, you're an amazing broadcaster, but I'm going to change your maths, right? So we're going to divide it by 10. Not 12.
Why?
Because on January, if we do it by 12, mm-hmm. it'll be next January by the time we need the money. We need the money for the 1st of November.
Okay.
So
okay.
You need to do it by 10, okay? Look, I'm a financial planner. I'm not a skilled broadcaster. But what I would say is we divide it by 10. So if it costs you €1,400, which is the average, you need to put €140 a month aside. That's not the first time you and I have used this method before. Christmas mm-hmm. is no different than your holiday in the summertime or something else. €140 a month aside for 10 months. And then on the 1st of November, you've got your €1,400.
Yeah. You see, I just... You want us to have all these pots of money, Christmas, holidays, car insurance. What do we use to eat then in those months?
But the point here, Claire, is there are certain people who won't borrow for Christmas this year. So they are affording it, right? They're not having to borrow. But if you are one of those people who are borrowing for Christmas right now, it's likely you're going to fall into the same bracket as the person who can't put £140 a month aside for 10 months or whatever the holiday cost is and divide that out. But my point is always the same. Doing 70 a month or doing 35 a month or doing a tenner a month towards Christmas for 10 months is better than doing nothing. And it means you start to break that cycle, that you borrow less next year than you did this year. And you, if you do it over a couple of years, you will start to trend it back towards yourself.
Okay, now I have loads of questions.
Great.
Now they won't all relate to the topic that we were discussing, but they are all about money. So let's have a look. I have €10,000 in an Irish bank savings account. It's not a huge amount, but I'm wondering where would be the best place for it, or should I invest it somewhere? That's a listener in County Clare. Well done for having your €10,000, but where should it be?
So what I would always apply here is my five-year rule. So the five-year rule says, if you need the money in the next 5 years, it belongs in a bank account, credit union, on post, right? And the banks will probably give out to us after this one, but all the interest rates are awful, right? So you can spend as much time as you want, but it's going to make very little difference. You can Google it online and you can find like ccpc.ie, for example, have a money tool and they'll show you all the different rates that are available on the bank. So if it's less than 5 years, and I have done work with CCPC in the past, just to declare that as well, right? But they haven't asked me to say that, but it's a great tool. It shows you all the interest rates that are available on the market right now today, and it's kept live and up to date. If the money is going to be needed in more than 5 years' time, you need to get some advice and get that invested. And people say, is it worth investing €10,000? Absolutely, right? The rules for €10,000 are exactly the same when it comes to investing as €10 million. Right now, we have €163 billion sitting on deposit. Mm-hmm. That's just the households of Ireland. I believe if you applied the five-year rule to that, about €100 billion of that shouldn't be there. and it should be moved out. And it's just making life much harder for people. People work hard for their money, but then they leave it sitting on a deposit account and it's not working hard for them.
So you want them to get it working,
yes,
get it moving. Here's a very happy listener who's been made redundant and have received a cash lump sum. I'm in my 40s, but I'm lucky to have my mortgage and my car paid off. It's a great position to be in. I'm not sure what to do next or with the money. Any advice would be much appreciated. Go on holidays.
Yeah. Well, actually, I would agree with that. I totally agree with that. The first thing is I'm delighted to hear the positivity coming out of that text, because a lot of the time when people do get made redundant, it's like doomsday and they can't see a way forward. I have yet to come across somebody 6 to 9 months after a redundancy who doesn't turn around and say, that was the best thing that ever happened. I was stuck in a rut, or I didn't like it there, or I landed this job because I was forced into this position. And it actually is a really hard thing to see, or to, when you're sitting in the middle of it, and when you're watching someone else suffering with it, you have to pick your moment to say, oh, McGee said in 6 or 9 months time you're going to be delighted, right? So just pick your moment on that one. But I've yet to come across someone who wasn't delighted with the redundancy. But what should that person do with the money? First of all, if they've got another job lined up, well, then definitely the holiday and go for it and do whatever else they want to do. If it's a lot of money, again, apply the 5-year rule. But what I would say is if you don't have a job lined up and you don't know where the next move is, you do nothing with that money for the moment until it's lined up, because you don't know how long you're going to have to rely on it. Mm-hmm. And they're in a great position. They've no car loan, they've no mortgage, they've no debt is what it sounds like. But if they run out of that money before they get a job, they're going to have to start accumulating debt, and they're not very attractive to a bank to give them a loan of money if they're not in a job.
Okay, so sit tight if yes. you don't have a job lined up. If you do have a job lined up, maybe a bit of a treat. Something
absolutely
sensible.
No, not necessarily sensible. Blow it. Go on, go for it.
Now, lots of people leaving money in their current accounts, but we have addressed that. I can't afford to pay 1.5% of my pay into this new auto-enrolment or mandatory pension in January. My workplace says I can't opt out for the first 6 months. Is there any way to reduce the impact of the new charge? Now, this is the auto-enrolment My Future Fund
yes.
pension scheme starting in January.
Yeah.
What happens if you think you can't afford it? And
so if you can't afford it, the problem is one of the ways you can trick the system at the moment is to have a pension contribution coming out of your wages on the 1st of January. So if it's on your payslip, you're not going into auto-enrolment. So if that person's really stuck, I'm sure the people of auto-enrolment world will kill me for saying that. But all that's happening in January, the payroll providers have teamed up with the auto-enrolment providers. They're going to scan through every payslip in the country, and if it says the word pension on it, you're not going into auto-enrolment. And if it doesn't say the word pension and you're eligible, i.e. over 23, under 60, making more than 20,000 euros a year, you are going into auto-enrolment. Mm-hmm. So it might be an option for that person. Now, 1.5%, it depends on what their wages are, but it might be an option that for that person to put, set up a pension contribution for less than 1.5%. And the pension providers won't be happy with me, but they might pay it for a month or two and then find that they can't afford it. And they'll be, but they will be dragged back into auto-enrolment again in a couple of months' time. Mm-hmm. It's like after 6 months, if you're not in, they're going to do the test again and see what happens.
But look, that money is coming back to you. You know,
it
it's
is.
An investment in your future.
Yeah, and I'd love to know more about that person's circumstance, because I really think if they can at all, they shouldn't miss this opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like it is an opportunity. And it's not just if you don't put your 1.5% in, you're not getting anything off the government and you're not getting anything off your employer. You're effectively saying to your employer and the government, I don't want your money, and you're saying to your boss, I don't want that pay rise.
Yeah, because that is an important part of it as well.
Yeah.
You know, you are getting a bit from both of
yeah.
those sources into your pension fund, which will be good, you know,
yes.
in the long term. All right, let's take another one. I'm a retired pensioner. I'm on a work-related private pension scheme. It will be 13 months at the end of this month, and I'm still waiting for 3 pension increases to be added to that pension. Is it normal to have to wait this long? I contacted my pension provider by email weeks ago, but I've yet to receive a reply.
Okay, the fact that it's going on this long, and it does seem a bit unusual, we probably need a bit more background. This is the trick when dealing with any financial institution. When you've got to the end of your tether with their processes, send them an email and use the words, this is a formal complaint. And if you use those words, it goes into a process that's managed, and they have to reply to that within 5 days. Usually within 5 days, they'll give you a holding letter. And then within 20 days, they'll give you a response. Sometimes after 20 days, they might respond, say, we need another 20 days, but they have to outline how long they expect it to take. Once you do that, a red flag goes up inside that institution and it'll get escalated, and they'll try and deal with it as soon as possible.
Put the pressure on.
Yeah. So the words, this is a formal complaint and put it in writing by email. There'll already be emailing them, so it'll be very easy for them.
Now, here's another one. This is an interesting one. What do you say parents of newborns should do in relation to saving for the baby's future? Now, they are in a good position because they say they can afford to put his child benefit into a savings account. But what's tax efficient and the best vehicle for that?
OK, so one of the things, they're just like a retake of all the pieces we've done throughout the year together, right? But you might remember, actually, maybe you were off in August, so we'll let you off on that one, right? But I was in here in August and we were talking about child benefits specifically, €140 a month. If you're a listener and you don't have a child, you don't need to tune out. The maths are still the same. It's €140 a month. And if people are lucky enough to put it away and they don't need it on a month-to-month basis, if you put it into a bank account, ignoring tax, at €140 a month over 18 years, it's going to turn into €33,000. If you put it into an investment portfolio, and I would always talk about, if you're not getting advice, the no-brainer 60-40 portfolio, 60% in shares and 40% in global bonds and global shares. That's just a style of investing. It's not a fund, it's a style of investing. And if you put it into that and you manage to get 4%, you're talking about €44,000. Now, I've brought college into it just for the purposes of it, but college costs about €13,305 per year per child, according to the research that's out there. So let's just round that off to €50,000. Your bank account is going to get to 33 if you manage to get 1% on average all the way up. Your investment account is going to get 44. But before I came in here in August, I looked at a fund that was available 18 years ago to all the people of Ireland and is still available today. Before anyone asks, I'm absolutely not saying which one it is because it may not be suitable for you. But that matured in August after 18 years at €67,000. So it's the same money being used in a very different way, getting a very different result. Mm-hmm. And it's what I would say is getting advice could be the difference between doubling your money or not.
Do you put that account in the child's name?
No, you don't. There's a different rule there because you're going to use it for their college. So your child is allowed to have €400,000 off you in their lifetime. But things like bread and milk and clothing them and heating them and a reasonable contribution to their wedding doesn't come out of that €400,000, but either does college. So there's no point in putting in the child's name and you losing control over it. There is other things we use that we put into children's name if you want to give them a deposit for the house because that will come out of the €400,000. So if you're in a really lucky position, you might use the annual gift allowance every year.
Okay, another quick one before we go. My husband is in his late 60s with no pension. We still have a mortgage which will be fully paid off in 2 years' time. We've come into a small amount of money. My question is, would we be better off to pay off the mortgage or invest the bit of cash in a PRSA for him?
This is a really difficult one because without knowing the exact interest rates on the mortgage, without knowing what their plans are in terms of are they definitely going in 2 years' time. The disadvantage of putting money into pension for most people is it's gone until retirement. That person is so close to retirement, they don't have that disadvantage anymore. My gut is telling me it's probably better off in the PRSA, but I can't say for sure, okay, is all I would say about that.
Okay, Owen, thank you so much. Owen McGee there, who is a financial planner, and thank you so much for all of your questions. Let's take a break. I'm back after this.